This is Heather Dubrow's World, and now you can live in it for 1 hour each week right here at Podcast One. Welcome back. Everyone say hi to my beautiful assistant, Natalie.
Hello, how are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
My producer, Ray. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. This is a big show. This is a very personal show today, and I haven't really done anything very serious on the podcast yet, but I really thank you all for listening. I had so many incredible questions and comments after a recent Instagram post. So for some of you that didn't see it, I posted a picture of my embryo storage bill from when I had IVF done. So I've gotten so many comments and questions about my infertility journey and what happened with Terry and I. So I thought, you know what, let's just do a whole show about it, because I feel like it's something that people don't talk enough about. And if you don't talk about it, how do you learn? And when you're going through it, so hopefully this will help someone. So when Terry and I decided to start a family, you know, I just assumed it was going to be easy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No one ever thinks, oh, am I going to have issues? It's just kind of like a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and, you know, get pregnant. And
right. Like, yeah. I pictured candles and a bottle of champagne. I didn't picture, like, a sterile gray table
and
a hospital gown.
Stop.
No, but that's what it is. So we tried for a while. And, of course, you know me. I'm scheduled. Like,
right.
We're going to get pregnant on this day, and then we're going to have the baby here, and that'll work perfectly with the television schedule so I can get a job next year, whatever it was. But we tried for, like, a year and a half, almost 2 years, and nothing.
And you were how old?
We started when I was like 30, I think. Yeah, and I think they say, and I want to ask Dr. Potter when he comes later, but I think they say if you start trying before the age of 35, I think that's when they call it advanced maternal age.
Okay.
So we started trying when I was about 30 and nothing, mm-hmm. Nothing happened. So then you have to go get tested.
Right.
So you have to go through all these sort of invasive and non-invasive procedures. For women. I mean, you know, and some of them are kind of embarrassing. Your legs are up above your head and they're sticking things inside of you and testing all kinds of levels and making sure your pipes are clean in there and that kind of thing. And Terry basically just has to go into a room and jack off.
Really? But don't they test you first and then they'll test the man, or is it the same time?
I feel like they did it all at the same time, but I don't remember which one came first. But I think they test sperm first because it's an easier test.
Right.
I mean, literally all they do is go into a room. So it's so funny. So I have to tell the story because, you know, you go into an office and Terry's a doctor, so anything clinical, whatever. So we're in there and we talk to the guy that's going to run the test on the sperm, and he basically points Terry towards this room.
Oh my gosh.
And he goes into the room and there's, you know, I peek in there and there's I go, do you want me to come in the room with you?
You know?
And he goes, no. I'm like, okay. So he goes in the room and I peeked and there was like a TV and there's a stack of like, you know, nudie magazines.
Yeah.
And there's video because you got to kind of.
Is it like a bed, a couch, a seat, or what is it?
It was a purple velvet settee. I will never forget this. And all I was thinking, but I didn't want to freak him out, is please don't sit on that.
Just stand up.
Please just don't touch anything. So he went in there and he was in there for like some time. And I'm thinking, what is going on? This is totally TMI, but it was so funny. So he pops his head out a few minutes later and he goes, honey, come here. And I'm like, what? So I walk over and he goes, show me your boobs.
And I shut up.
What? Are you crazy? But no one else is there.
God,
so I did.
Funny.
Like, I opened my shirt.
No.
Swear to God. I opened my shirt and he goes, okay, go. Get out.
That is so funny.
It was so funny.
Oh my gosh.
So he took care of himself and in the cup, and then we go into the lab because he's a doctor. The guy running the test, they let him see the sperm under the microscope.
Yeah.
And of course, it's like superhuman sperm.
Oh, geez.
And you can imagine how Terry went on and on and on about how he is the sperm of a 20-year-old and all this kind of thing. So clearly, it was my issue, but it was unexplained infertility.
Okay.
So what they do is they start you off with simple things. Mm-hmm. So you start with maybe some drugs. I'm sure they've changed in the last many years, mm-hmm. but, you know, for me, it was Clomid. We started with Clomid. And each month, it's that excitement, like, did it work? You know, is this going to be just the little boost I needed? And then every time, you know, you get your period, it's like, you know, a glass of wine and tears and, you know, it sucks. So we did that. We did injections. We did IUI, which is basically when they take the sperm and they inject it into you.
Oh, okay.
And hopefully that it'll go up there and meet the egg and that kind of thing. And nothing worked.
Oh my, was it painful or is it like a...
No, it wasn't. Those weren't painful, but some of the meds, I mean, that Clomid is like, for me, it was mm-hmm. like liquid evil. Like literally, I would take the pill and an hour later, I felt like my head was going to spin and turn around my body and it was awful. I hated it. So after trying with help at the doctor's office, we went to Dr. Hal Danzer, who was amazing. And I said to him, I go, I need a break. Mm-hmm. It was like Christmas time and I just, my body and everything. I just needed a break. And so I took a break and it was pilot season and I went on auditions. And after a few months, I thought, okay, you know, I don't know. I really want to have a baby and I feel like we got to get going, you know. I'm now like 32, 33. And I went back to the doctor and I go, so tell me about in vitro fertilization. What is the percentage that I can get pregnant on that? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, with everything else we've done for the last, you know, 9 months or whatever, I would say probably 80% chance of success. And I went, okay, all right, I'll take it. I'll do the IVF.
Yeah.
So, which is a lot more involved.
Yeah.
You have to have your eggs extracted from you, which, you know, they put you under anesthesia and they go inside your uterus and they go through the side of it with a needle to pull out the eggs from, you know, where your eggs are.
From
where your eggs are. Okay. Okay. Very good. And they pull them out and then your husband is in another room with no purple settee this time, just some sterile room and doing his thing. And they put them together in a Petri dish. I mean, that's basically what happens. So, we did that. And I remember on the day that I had my eggs extracted, I had it done that morning, went home and took a nap, and I went to a network test for a television show at 5 o'clock that night.
No.
Yes.
Oh my God. You were just up and back at it.
No, I was completely out of it.
Oh, you were.
I didn't get the job. I was just in such denial over the fact that I could control my body and having this procedure done and how this entire, you know, getting pregnant thing was going. It was just really indicative of the fact that I needed to like release control of what was going on with this. And so after that, I stopped auditioning and we finished the IVF. They fertilized the eggs and we ended up with 4 embryos and they put them all in.
Wow. So you never really know what's going to grab or not, right?
You don't. And the thing about fertility is that it's different for every person. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're reinventing the specialty with every person because everyone's got different problems and the combination of the egg and the sperm could have different problems and putting them together. So you don't know. And you know, the part that was so hard for me was that, you know, as an actress, you really have to strike while the iron's hot. And Brooke Shields and I used to talk about this all the time because Screen Actors Guild Health doesn't cover infertility. And we just always thought that was such crap because we put off having kids because if you're on a TV show, you know, especially at that time, you know, you didn't want to lose a job or you didn't want to not get a job because
it's your priority.
Pregnant. It's your priority. And if you're on on an upward swing and you're working a lot, you want to keep working because you never know when that's going to end. It's a really, really hard thing to do, but not just as an actress. A lot of people who are career minded business people, they put family on the back burner because they have to, either for monetary reasons or because they're on a certain track that they don't want to get off of. So there really is no perfect time. I think luckily for me, I figured out I definitely needed to release that and just move forward because Terry and I did want to have a family and this was the time. So lucky for me, out of the 4 embryos they put in, 3 took.
Three took,
which was a big deal. I carried triplets for 14 weeks.
Wow.
And then we lost one.
And at that point you can hear heartbeats at 14 weeks.
Yeah. No, so it was devastating. And we knew that it was a boy and 2 girls because, we had a procedure done that's kind of like an amnio, but they can do it at 12 weeks.
Okay.
So we knew what they were. And it was, you know, it was sort of heartbreaking, but, you know, I think that, you know, there was a reason, obviously.
Of course.
And so, and I still had 2, and that was a lot. You know, I thought I was going to have 1, so that was a lot. But more about that later. And I think they do a lot of the testing now by just taking blood. You don't have to do all this invasive testing.
Oh, really?
Anymore. Yeah. So we'll ask Dr. Potter about that. But anyway, so I carried the triplets for 13 weeks, and then we lost one of the girls, and we knew we had a boy and a girl, which, you know, we knew they were healthy because we'd had this testing done. So even though I was a little nervous, by like 20 weeks, I felt pretty comfortable that things were going well and the two babies were growing really well.
Yeah.
And then I had preeclampsia towards the end of my pregnancy, which is really common for a twin pregnancy. Mm-hmm. You know, I was kind of large. And,
Did you gain a lot of weight during the twins?
I gained a lot of, I think I would probably lie at the time and say it was like 46 pounds, but I think it was more like 57.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I was an actress. This was like the first time I was allowed to eat in like 10 years.
But I've seen pictures though. It was just your belly.
It really wasn't.
Really?
You think I put up pictures?
I swear, your arms were still skinny. Your face was skinny. I mean, like, you didn't swell up.
I didn't put pictures up of the last month. That's when you get the neck and the arms and the legs.
The cankles.
The whole thing. It was bad, and I had preeclampsia, so I was swollen. And I actually went full term, which for twins is 38 weeks. But I almost had to give birth earlier because Nikki, my son, one of the twins, he wasn't moving.
Oh,
so they had me in a room and they had me on a monitor and they were like, we need to keep you here until he moves, because if he doesn't move, we're going to just take you to the hospital and take them out because we're worried. I said, okay, so I'm lying on this thing and they've got, you know, the monitors hooked up to my belly and I can see Nikki and his sack there and I could see sort of a piece of Max's sack next to it, and they're giving me cold water and they're doing everything they can to wake him up.
Yeah.
And then I swear to God, like, if this happened in a movie, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But we're watching the screen, and all of a sudden, you see Max's hand come into the screen and push Nikki's sack.
That's like insane.
Like she's saying, get up. They will not stop watching or drinking cold water until you wake up. Just get up.
That's the sweetest thing
It was I've so ever funny.
Heard.
So she pushed him. And what's really funny is that now, like, they're 12 and a half years old, and the opposite is true, because Max refuses to get up in the morning, and Nikki's like, come on.
That's the sweetest thing.
So that's what happened, and we had the twins, and they were healthy, and we were very lucky. So we were lucky because our first IVF cycle worked, and that's not the case for most people. And I think we just got lucky. It was just the right combination of, you know, whatever the drugs were. We had, like, you know, 13 eggs extracted and, you know, eight fertilized, four made it to the end stage, and they put those in and ended up with three and ultimately two.
Wow.
So we were very, very lucky. And then when the twins were about a year and a half years old, maybe, we decided to have another.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about it, and we never used protection. So it wasn't like,
because at this point, you didn't think you could even get pregnant.
No, because what was the point?
I mean,
we tried for a long time, and so it wasn't happening. So, and obviously, it still hadn't happened since I'd had the twins. So we wanted to have one more. We went right back to IVF. This time, I really just wanted the experience of having one child.
Mm-hmm.
So when we did the IVF, we ended up with three embryos.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, what do you do? I mean, this is what's so strange about doing fertility, because you have to make all of these decisions and you don't want to play God, but you are already playing God because you're doing this, you know, surgeries and putting eggs and sperm together where it wasn't coming together inside of you naturally.
Right.
So where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
So we get these three embryos, and I just want one, and I don't care what it is, because I already have a boy and a girl, and I'm fine, doesn't matter. And I said, just put in the strongest one. And they went, well, because this time we had done PGD, which is genetic testing they can do on the embryos before they put them back inside of you.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
What's amazing about it was I didn't want to know the sex of the babies. I just wanted to know that they were healthy.
Right.
Because there's apparently one chromosome that they can test to see if it's even going to result in a full pregnancy.
Oh.
And after what happened the first time, that was very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure if we're going to have one, we're putting in like the strongest, healthiest one.
Right.
So the lab knew the sexes of the babies, but I didn't.
Uh-huh.
So I said, just put in the strongest one. They went, well, two of them are kind of neck and neck. And I went, oh, great. So Terry and I had to have a conversation about it.
Oh, you did?
Well, I mean, at some point, are you going to let the lab guy decide what you're having, or are you going to decide?
Right. You're already at this point. You might as well.
But that is the choice. Either the lab guy's going to pick a boy or a girl. That's not God's will.
Right. Exactly.
So we talked about it, and I come from a family of sisters. And I guess maybe because the one we had lost was a girl, it was on my mind still. And so we put this girl embryo in, and we got Katarina.
Wow. So it took.
It took. I was afraid if I put in more than one, that I was going to get twins or triplets, and I wasn't ready to go from two to five kids.
Right. That's just too much.
It was too much. And I thought, well, if we ever wanted a fourth, you know, maybe, I don't know.
Can I ask, so is it the same amount of money if you just put one in versus three, or does it not make a difference?
I don't think it makes a difference for that, but it definitely costs money per embryo to do the genetic testing.
Okay.
And then it costs money per embryo to store them frozen.
Oh, okay.
Which is what I did.
Now.
So I froze the frozen embryos and I froze the frozen.
Yeah.
I froze the two embryos and we thought we would just wait and see what happened. And then what happened was we got Katarina and I had the experience of having one child. Right. And then this is going off the fertility subject a little bit, but when she was 15 months old, she had some health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I went crazy and I said to Terry, we're done.
Like you couldn't
And as it turned out she was okay.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in another episode. But she was okay. And I said, you know, we're so lucky. We have three healthy kids. I know we have these two frozen embryos, but, you know, I don't think we should hedge our bets here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like we escaped something.
Right.
And Terry agreed. But the problem is now I get this bill every year.
Right.
For the last how many years? Okay, and then, and I'm sure everyone's sitting at home going, but what about Coco?
Yeah.
So what happens is we have this scare with Katarina, and we decide we're done. We have three healthy kids. We're just going to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years later, I wake up, and I'm getting the three kids ready for school, and I feel like I'm going to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm helping Max do something. I'm like, I didn't even think, oh, I might be pregnant. I didn't have a conscious thought.
Is it like the same feeling that you thought or that you had with the other three, or did you not get sick at all?
No, but I knew when I got pregnant the first two times with the twins and with Katarina, I knew I was pregnant before symptoms
ever
started.
But you never got sick?
But it didn't matter because I already knew.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
But I'm saying, like, was it like a familiar feeling?
No, because this was just like, it wasn't even on my mind.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
right.
It was like, no.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, I feel sick. That's so weird. But I sort of walked to the bathroom without a conscious thought, dug under my sink, found an EPT. I swear to God, it was probably expired. Peed on the stick, threw it on the counter. And then Katarina came in and she's talking to me and we're whatever. And I kind of forgot about it. And I went over to look at it. And it was the kind that spelled out pregnant.
Oh, my gosh. It couldn't have been more clear.
And I didn't even think this could be false. I should get a blood test. Oh my gosh, I should find out for sure and then tell Terry in a nice way. Because usually a pregnancy test always ended up with like a lot of tears and a bottle of wine.
Right,
so
right.
This was, I had never seen a positive pregnancy test.
Oh my gosh.
So instead of doing all of that, I screamed, Terry! Like at the top of my lungs, and he came running up the stairs because he hadn't gone to work yet. And he goes, what? And I, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? And I just showed him the test and he started hysterically laughing.
He was laughing?
He thought it was like the funniest thing.
Why?
And I just sat down and I was like, oh my. And then I had a blood test and
yeah.
It was confirmed. And then I actually went to a fertility specialist to follow my pregnancy to monitor me because they didn't know why I couldn't get pregnant before.
Right.
And this was so weird. And I want to talk to Dr. Potter about that too, because there's also a weird phenomenon about people that try fertility for years and then they adopt a child and get pregnant naturally. Right after.
What is up with that?
That's I don't know. So people say, well, you weren't relaxed.
Right.
I'm like, well, was I not relaxed for 13 years?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So we got super lucky and, you know, we feel really blessed, but I still have these two frozen embryos. And every year it's a conversation and I get the bill and I say to Terry, oh, and, you know, we talk about it and we decide that, you know, we're good.
You're going to keep paying it. And
I just pay it and I forget about it for a year.
Oh, it's so hard.
It's very hard. But then I think, like, what if one of my girls, because my sister had fertility issues too, what if one of my girls had a fertility issue? Is that a weird concept? Would they ever want one of those embryos to raise their own genetic material?
That's interesting. I would never even thought about that.
I don't know what would do with it. People say to give it up for adoption. I don't think that I could know that, like, my child is out there somewhere.
Yeah,
but I also heard someone say that they could give them up for adoption in 60 years, so not in their lifetime.
Oh, that's something to think about.
I don't know. So we're gonna talk. Taylor Dane is here today, which I'm very excited about, and she's gonna share with us her fertility struggles and her journey. And Dr. Dan Potter is here, which is also going to be great. He's going to give us all the insight. He's a really well-known fertility doctor down in Orange County. So before we get to that, my beauty tip of the day is going to be all wrapped up in this fertility, because when you're doing fertility, it's tough. You're taking shots every day, and I'm sort of giving the Reader's Digest version of it, but it's a really big deal. You get scar tissue from all the shots, and the some of the meds make you really sick, and sometimes fertility for people take years.
Right.
Sometimes it's not that fast. But no matter how long it takes, it does take a toll on your body. So my tip is to focus on a body part. Mm-hmm. Because no matter how bad you feel, everyone's got one part of their body that they like. Like, I like my lips. Mm-hmm. So I know if I'm feeling awful, or my face is broken out, or, you know, I've gained 10 pounds, or I'm doing fertility and I'm swollen, or I just had a baby, whatever it is, I can look at my mouth, put on lip liner and my favorite gloss, and just focus on that part and feel good.
I love that.
So I don't care if it's your hands. Some people have such cute feet. Some people have great ears. Just highlight whatever it is that makes you feel good. Pick a part of you, love it, and stick to it. And then for the hippest, hottest, newest, I am going to highlight the Polaroid Zip Printer.
I've seen it. It's fun.
It's so cool. Yeah. So it's an app on your phone, and you can print pictures from your phone. And this is a great thing to do for baby books if you've just had a baby, or, you know, any kind of little picture that you need. It's great for parties, or if you want to throw a little picture in your kid's lunchbox. That's because cute. You go to the app on your phone and it syncs the pictures from your phone right to this tiny little black box, and it prints out a Polaroid.
Yeah. And they're really clear too.
It's so cute, because I never print photos anymore.
I know, people don't do that anymore.
I only do it when one of the kids is Star of the Week. Yeah. The dreaded poster board for Star of the Week. Okay, and this is random, but I've decided maybe we need a word of the day.
Okay.
Because there was a word I couldn't remember. It was driving me crazy. So here it is. My word of the day is palindrome.
A palindrome.
Yes, because Max is studying the Panama Canal. Yeah. And I go, oh, have you ever heard that? A man, a plant, a canal, Panama. And she was like, no. I go, it's the same thing forwards and backwards. She goes, no, it's not. I go, yeah, it is. So I go, write it down. A man, a plant, a canal, Panama. So she wrote it down and read it backwards and forwards. She was like, oh, that's so cool. I go, it has a name. I go, what are those called? It's not an anagram. It's not an onomatopoeia. And it took me so long, I had to look it up. It was driving me insane.
So funny.
It's a palindrome. Okay, there it is. Thank you all for all your comments. And I hope that gave you a little insight into what we went through. And next up, we have superstar Taylor Dane and fertility expert Dr. Dan Potter. So stay with us. Are you single? Are you dating on Match? Because if you're single and not dating on Match, then you're really missing out. These days, everything has moved online, including dating. Online dating is the norm, with 1 in 3 relationships now starting online. Everyone wants to find that great connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates too. And you can check out Match for 7 days free. Go to match.com/Heather to redeem your 7 days free. Plus, we're all so busy these days, so download their mobile app to get your matches sent directly to your phone. Then you can search on the go or from the comfort of your own couch. It's dating your way. Dating can be difficult, so if you're not using Match, then you're missing out. Go to match.com/Heather today, where you'll get to try Match for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search and connect. This special offer is only found at match.com/Heather. That's match.com/Heather. Happy Earth Month, everybody. I know that every year we write down different goals that we want to accomplish. And maybe one of your goals for 2024 is to shop sustainably. Well, here's some fantastic news. Macy's makes it easy to do just that. This Earth Month, join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. And by the way, who doesn't love going to the park, especially in the spring? Super cute little doggies on leashes, soaking up the sun with your friends or your kids or your little nieces and nephews. Well, check this out. Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project. Their goal is to transform vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help create healthy, livable communities for generations to come. I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting small changes to make a huge difference. Donate online or in-store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose.
Now, back to Heather Dubrow's world.
Welcome back. We are back with the incredible superstar, oh my gosh, Taylor Dayne.
Oh, thank you.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I am so, so excited you're here, and I'm so happy that you're talking about this subject.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting subject, so bring it on.
All right, well, really before we jump in, because I'm a huge, huge fan, and I've been listening to and singing your music alone in my bedroom for many years.
Really?
Oh, yeah, of course. First of all, congratulations on your new single.
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
It's pretty cool. So very good. Simple. You know, we just do direct to iTunes now, and it's really, it's a very brave new world. It's
Isn't
very cool.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, we shot it in Malibu. It's very cool. Yeah. Friends, let's go. Directors. I mean, over the years, 27 years I've been doing this. I know a lot of photographers and not a lot of directors. So it's pretty wonderful.
Yeah, it's called Dreamin'. It's great. If you have not heard
Thank you.
Heard it, by the way. It's everywhere. It's amazing.
It's pretty cool. Thank you.
So you, like you were just talking about, I mean, your career has spanned decades.
Yeah, two. And I think it's moving to the third eventually.
Well,
not
you don't
too far
look
off.
Like it. You don't look like it. Maybe you should
Heather,
tell people.
We're going to make love after this day. Woo, we're going to be lovers. I can feel it.
So how do you stay relevant?
That's a tricky subject. I think you have to stay true to yourself. I think integrity is a big part of yourself and as a woman and as an artist. I think relevant, I mean, I think you see some artists that constantly are visually doing the change. And, of course, David Bowie, I mean, you look at art and you say, you know, challenge your audience, constantly challenge your audience. And for me, it's always challenge me, challenge myself. I'm now in the process of writing a book. My book, my story. So I'm challenging myself. I'm starting with, I always go, who's the best at this? So I kind of go through my list and see who will help me and work with me. And I'm going to take a writer's workshop and I'm going to start really digging into that. So it's the challenge, but artistically it has to be my words. It has to be from my heart and my phrases. So again, that comes down to music. And I think that's how you stay relevant, by talking to yourself and knowing your own voice.
I agree. I love the way you just put that. And it's funny because for me, I, as a control freak, and I always thought I knew what my path was going to be as an actress and then whatever else I was going to do. And it completely changed.
Of course it does.
Which it does. So I've learned to, I'm much better at releasing that. But it's funny, now I enjoy doing things that just make me feel creative in different ways, because my husband and I just finished writing a book.
Fantastic.
And like you said, you know, we had to write it. It had to come from us. It had, and
your
it was,
voice, literally.
Literally. And it's like, it, I mean, no pun intended, it's like giving birth.
100%. I swear to God, it's so hard for me to let go of a record, because it is. It's like this process. And every second and word you're going to write, you're going to understand, like you're going to feel like this chapter was, oh my God, it was the first 3 months. It's like the tries, you know, it's like very crazy stuff. And records were the same thing. I mean, it takes a real process to let it go.
So when you listen to a particular track, do you get to a point, or is it ever done for you?
Oh, yeah.
You get to
okay.
The point.
It's like people watching themselves on film. It's months later by the time it's released. And then when it's out there, you're like, that was that. That's done. Bye bye. It's over. I'm already on to what's next.
Wow.
That's oh, yeah. So no way. And I just think that's the way it should be. Like, that was that. And I'm sorry, I understand music so much. I'm a fan of a million artists. So you want that connection. That music ties you to that, you know, that's the soundtrack of some people's lives, my music, obviously. And I have that, you know, fascination with the people I'm fans of and the artists. So I do understand that, how important it is to be tied like that. But I will say it's an interesting process. It really is.
So who inspires you? Who do you listen to? Who do you love?
I've always had a very diverse palette musically. I mean, I grew up in New York, clearly. And let's see, Long Island.
I'm a Westchester girl.
Well, sweetlies, you know, Long Island, you know. I have to say that it was the radio, right? The first thing I got was a radio, and my parents did give me the records. So it was the Beatles, it was the Stones, it was Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And then I went into the, you know, went through phases, Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith. But now, I mean, you know, there's a lot of hip-hop I do like. I mean, I think Kanye's unbelievable, Weeknd's unbelievable. I'll always have a Jill Scott going and Erykah Badu. That's just for me, yeah.
So what is tour? You still tour.
Mm-hmm.
So what is touring like now with children versus back in the day? I think I probably want to hear the back in the day story, but I'm just curious how that's changed.
Back in the day is you never look back. I'm like, where's the bus? And, oh, this tour lasted 15 months? Who knew? Yeah, I just feel this sense of response. I just, like, after 4 or 5 days, I'm like, damn, I got to get home. I got to do something. You know, I got to at least be present for them. They have to see me. My kids are very, I had them very differently. I know you want to get into that.
Yeah.
Very, very differently, especially during the time I did it. You know, now it's much more common. But I will say that, the control freak in me, obviously.
I knew I loved you.
Yeah. The control freak in me obviously knew that, I had to do it in a way that I felt comfortable. And they've always been very used to me picking up and going. Like, they've never been, don't leave. They're like, get the hell out. Bye, Felicia. Well, they really are.
But it's like when your partner travels, it's like, yeah, that's what you signed on for. That's what you're used to. That's what your kids know. But do you never brought them with you?
Oh, yeah. But in the summer, I mean, my kids are 14 now. I mean,
right,
they're like, you know, in the summer, it's like game on. They travel. First of all, my son loves to go to sleepaway camp. He goes with his guys and he does his thing. And then I usually knock it up where I'm back in the East Coast and I make sure the tour dates, and then my daughter will meet me. They can fly now. They meet me. They come, and they're always like in the trailer or in the bus. They hate watching the show.
So they can fly by. You let them fly by themselves at 14?
Yeah.
No, I'm asking because my cousins.
Yeah.
Daughter is flying at 10.
I used to fly at 10.
Mine flew at 10 too, but they had, you know, that's when you have to sign over. I mean,
you have to sign, yeah.
Someone has to pick them up at the
absolutely
front, at the door, yeah, the yeah gate.
No, it's only legal after, I think, 13, but at 14, they're yeah already still giving me the eye, like, really? I'm like, yeah, you know how to get to the gate? You watch me, I'm like a little lemming, move, 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 move. I'm always like, andale, andale. I'm always like, move it, move it.
That is so funny because I look at my four kids and say which, because I would never have done that. I'm not adventurous like that. But out of my four, two of them, I think would totally go. And the other two would be like, Mommy, walk me to the thing. Don't let me
well
go.
Well, how old are they?
They're 12, 12, 9,
well,
and 5.
So do I.
I know. We both have boy-girl twins.
Oh, yeah, that's great. We have each other. They really do.
It's it. The boy-girl really twin relationship is very unique.
Yeah, it is.
Or do they have a love-hate, a love-love? What do they have?
Of course. They baby wrestle still. I'm like, get the hell off your sister. Like, what is this? Like, really? Honestly. But I read a poem. He wrote something for class the other day, and it was, like, in the laundry room. I'm like, what is this doing in the laundry room? And I read it, and it just says, she always has me, and I always have her.
Aww.
And I don't even know what – and he made it rhyme and stuff, and I guess – I'm like, who is this for? And he goes, just give it to me. And I'm like, wow. It was really amazing.
Wow.
They were born together. Did you have that in your life? I don't even know what that feels like.
I mean, what an incredible thing to – and this is what Terry, my husband, and I always talk about with our twins is like exactly what you're saying. Like to know that in every stage of your life, there's someone there who's got you.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I always had a very deep sense of loneliness. I don't know. I was born that way. It must have been a past lives
kind of
thing.
Do you have siblings?
I do.
How many siblings do you have?
Two. I have two brothers. I'm the middle child. But I always felt removed from. And I know there's a lot of deep – things going there, but I have to say I never felt a part of. I've always had to work very hard to feel part of something.
Uh-huh.
And I know that sounds very unbelievable coming from my loud mouth, but really is. I very much sit back and force myself to get in. So to watch them where they are entitled to that, they believe and they know that they have that connection with somebody, with a person, with life. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's wow incredible. I
that's
love
your
watching
twins.
That.
They have it. You know what I mean? It's very different.
Yeah.
It really is. It's very interesting. For me, I mean, I come from a family. I have one sister.
Yeah.
And we always thought it would be nice because we were bored sometimes to have like a conversational third. So I always wanted to have a big family, but we started later and then had fertility problems.
Were you good friends or did you hate each other?
We were both.
Okay.
We would like fight and, you know.
Well, what was the distance in age?
We're only 16 months apart, which
oh,
was
wow
part of
right
the problem. So I think we were like a little too close. We could have used a little more distance, but it was like, you know, F you, F you, F you. So what are we doing tonight?
Right.
You know, like it's like that kind
or
of thing.
Or stay off my boyfriend kind of thing?
No, we never had that.
You didn't have jealousy
nope
with her?
Nope, we never had that.
Man, all girls. And I only had brothers. I see so much like, whoa, it's deep. Women like very there's a lot of that. I see it.
I'll tell you what I find interesting is that my daughter, and you've been through this recently because yours is 14. So
yeah
my oldest one is 12 and a half. And I see the girl situation that goes on at school.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. But you know what? It's such good learning lessons. And that one of my kids, they're not all the same, but her name's Max. She's like an older soul and she's pretty wise. And I'll sit with her and I go, I just want you to know, girls don't change. They just grow bigger.
Right.
So it's the same issues. If you can resolve it and figure it out now, I mean, what an easy time you're going to have later on.
I have to think about that, Heather. Girls don't change. It just grows.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that. I'm going to meditate on that.
Yeah. I'm not saying
I want to know what that means. Like,
become a different person. I'm saying, but most people aren't self-actualized enough to grow. I think a lot of times who you are is who you are and people stick with it in the lane.
Well, I definitely have women in my life and men, I mean, that honestly You're right. I mean, the same story. It's repetitive. Mm-hmm. It's the hamster wheel, I call it. I mean, for sure. And then it's funny when you don't see somebody for a long period of time and then they see you again and they say, wow, like, you've really changed or something. You know, you really have a different take on things. And to hear it from, you know, that's interesting. But I have to say there are those friends and those that, you know, that's where it kind of the seas, you know, they part a little bit and you start moving in different directions. And it almost is very natural.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So I do want to talk about fertility because, you know, your journey was just incredible. I'm just going to let you tell your story because I really, I just find it fascinating. Like, when did you decide, okay, I want to be a mom and what was going on with you?
Okay. 30s. Okay. 30s hit. I'd been on the road for, what, 7-8 years making records and just being the pop star and 30s and
– That sounds really good to me, by the way. I just want you to know.
No, I know. I get it. I totally do. And trust me, I didn't – I've always kind of done things my way, probably out of fear, probably out of survival mechanism, meaning that I was too scared for people to control me. So whatever that means, the good, bad, and the ugly, I'm sure there's some remorse for certain decisions. But in the long run, I look at my life now and I go, damn, girl, it's like not many women do what you do. And they just don't. Yeah. They don't. It's very difficult for them to wrap their head around doing it and making sure the result is okay. I think they always believe they can't do it. And let me phrase what that means. So by 34, I moved to L.A. I'd always been working here on and off anyway, and I moved here because Roseanne Barr hired me to do her television show. I was an actress, and I was working on that.
Oh, right. I remember you.
Yeah. Well, it didn't last too long because they canceled her show, but I was playing John's wife and girlfriend or something. And then anyway, so I was stuck here, and I didn't want to move back to New York. Another relationship – and I had my places in New York, and I stayed, and I went to get a liposuction consultation. And then that led to a liposuction. I'll remember this because I was think I was 34, 35, and I'm like, Jesus, another relationship, 2 years done. He moved back to, you know, New York. He didn't want to stay in L.A. And the woman's like, I'm coming out of the drug-induced coma I'm in. And I go, oh, my God, look at all these children on the ceiling. What is it? I don't even remember half the shit I said. Anyway, she goes, I go, I want a child. And she goes, I'll have one. And she was like a Trinidadian woman. I go, well, I'm not married. I don't have a boyfriend anymore. I'm not this. She goes, hire a surrogate. And I'm like, what? I'm like drugged. So by the time I sober up, I go, what do you mean? I go, what are all these babies? She goes, those are my children. I go, what did you do? She goes, I hired a surrogate. And I go, well, how old are you? She goes, that my husband is the doctor that worked on you. And I go, well, what's the deal? She goes, I'm 45 or something. She goes, I hired a surrogate. I go, well, what does the baby look like? She goes, it looks like me and him. And I go, well, what does that mean? I mean, I'm like, does it change when it goes? No clue. What's IVF? What does it all mean? I'm clueless. And she goes, it's rent a womb, rent a womb, rent a womb. And I go, oh, are you serious? Oh, well, that's all she had to do. The wheel started turning. Because I thought I had to adopt or whatever. A wheel started turning. Just all you have to tell me is I can do it myself and do it on my own, and I don't have to bake it or put it in the easy bake.
Okay, but that's my question. That's how it because started. You're like me. You're a control freak.
Probably.
Okay, so, I mean, by the way, to me, this is a compliment. I just want you to know that.
There are fabulous qualities to be.
Yes, really are. So what I'm saying is that, like, if I had needed a surrogate, I absolutely would go, because I think it's an incredible gift that someone can give. Unbelievably selfless, amazing gift. That's not legal in every state. I did not know that. We're going to talk about
that. Can you imagine that then? Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. But my question is, did you think about carrying it yourself or what the ramifications were of not being in control of the gestational period?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I worked very hard. I tour often and I went and actually at
and
the
And you
time,
had just had liposuction.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, it was the best lipo I ever had. All I can say is that the fear of being in a relationship that moves the cart before the horse, so to speak, I felt that why do I want to push a relationship just to have a child? That is always the curse. To me, there's this curse of death. Now, mind you, I wish I could fast forward in my mind now that would say, you know, let your guard down, let it. But I always felt like you can't force these kind of things.
Oh, I agree with that. Right. But did you consider like putting the embryo in yourself?
I did consider it, yes. Now, if you know me, which you don't, now you will, I have a scar from here to here on my bladder. Uh-huh. And at 4 or 5, I had massive surgery on my bladder and my kidney area. So I'm very prone to having a lot of problems there. All I can say is that I don't even know if I've never carried. I've never gone that route, although I would love to if I was in love and I felt I could. I would have loved to have that experience. But to me, that's a very shared experience.
That's very interesting.
Now, if you talk to like Sandra Bernhardt and stuff, she was like, I'm going to carry it. I'll bake it. I'll do it. I just didn't feel comfortable being this big woman out there with no love in my life and being actually kept off the dating trail. I swear to God. I made it very church
that.
And state.
Yeah.
I really did.
But you know what? I get that. And also, when you are pregnant, it's very like you need someone to take care of you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
I think that was actually a very practical thing to do.
That's probably the best word for it. Very practical. And again, medically, I can't really back that up with anything other than I've had difficulties my entire life, and nothing feels good about that area ever on me.
But also, you had a career, and you were doing things.
Well, and matter of fact, when I did finally find an agency that would actually take me, because A, I was a single parent, that was a big issue for them, and B, it wasn't even legal in half. Mostly it was legal
here.
It's
not legal in New York, right?
Well, it wasn't when I did it.
Wow.
And I ended up doing a lot of fertility stuff there. I did IVF. I went through the whole process more than IVF twice. It's egg retrieval, really.
Right.
And I had to do that twice because the first surrogate actually had an issue and she couldn't do the fresh retrieval.
Okay.
Or the fresh transfer. Actually, she was a transfer. Retrieval would be for me. So there was a lot of drama. And the baby daddy, my kids know their father, you know, very well.
So
it's a whole bunch of
you
stuff.
You picked some. You know who the father is.
Well, we dated. We used to call him Manchild. Hi, Mark. Yeah, he was 19. I was 25. He was miking me on Top of the Pops in London. And that's how it started.
Oh,
I was like,
wow.
Go get that guy. Oh, yeah. I was an animal.
And he was all in.
Well, fast forward 15 years later, and he was what, you know, in his 30, I guess. I was, maybe he was just 30, yeah.
Okay.
Right? I was 37, 38 when I did it. He just said, "Hun, I think this is a conversation in person." And I said, and he goes, "Listen," and he wasn't married at the time, and he just said, "You know what, you changed my life," and at the time, and there's nobody I trust more. I mean, he's not on the birth certificate. He's an incredible man. He's married now, has three kids. We all know each other. We all, you know, and hopefully one day my kids will be traveling there and spending time and hopefully nannying for his kids, because that's probably a lot of kids under the age of five, three of them. And I just look at it as a big, big family kind of vibe. Although it doesn't coexist that way. I mean, it was very much on my plate, nobody else's plate.
So
but he gave me the gift. Yes, he did.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
so when you're going through this, who's your support system? Because you have to confide in someone. I mean, I would bitch to Terry every day about the shots. I mean, you know, because when you're going for those egg retrievals, you got to give yourself. By the way, I gave myself all my husband is a plastic surgeon. He can give shots. And I gave myself all my own shots, all my own everything. So same as you. That's such a pain.
Who did you
talk to? Well, who was around?
I have to be honest. At that time, believe it or not, I went to New York to do Broadway. Right at the same time.
That was Aida, right?
I went to do Aida,
yeah.
And I actually, that's when they told me the first surrogate, I had to do a lot of fertility, I had to do it in New York. So they set me up with somebody, an incredible specialist in New York. And I had to fly back to L.A. numerous times, eventually, obviously, to do retrieval. Mark had to fly in, drop his load. Like, we had to do a lot of stuff.
The purple couch.
You know, they're dark. The theater was dark. You know, Sunday I'd fly out, gain my hours back. Monday, dark. Tuesday, I was back on stage, 7 p.m. It's 8 shows a week. And I have to say, like, it was a pretty amazing thing because it wasn't legal there. But this guy surged me, got the most amount of eggs the second time. And it was a pretty amazing situation. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Okay, I have to take a break.
Yeah.
Please stay. We're going to be back with more Taylor Dayne, and Dr. Dan Potter is going to be here too, so stay tuned. Third Love's 24/7 T-shirt bra is one of the most comfortable bras you will ever own. It's super smoothing and invisible under any outfit, and the cups are made out of memory foam, so it molds to your shape to truly give you the perfect fit. I mean, have you ever had a bra that has fit issues, like you have cup spillage or gaping, the straps slip off? You don't get that with Third Love. With Third Love, you get a great fit. You can wear it under any outfit, and the nude shade is absolutely perfect under any color. Third Love stands behind this product so much that they're willing to let my listeners try this bra for free. Isn't that great? You just pay $1 for shipping. You wear it for 30 days. You could take the tags off, wear it, wash it to really try this bra out. And if you love it, keep it and they'll charge your card. And if you don't love it, send it back for free and your card will not be charged. Don't know your size? A friendly online fit specialist will help you find your perfect fit. Go to www.thirdlove.com/Heather. That's www.thirdlove.com/Heather to get started.
Happy Earth Month, everybody. I know that every year we write down different goals that we want to accomplish. And maybe one of your goals for 2024 is to shop sustainably. Well, here's some fantastic news. Macy's makes it easy to do just that. This Earth Month, join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. And by the way, who doesn't love going to the park, especially in the spring? Super cute little doggies on leashes, soaking up the sun with your friends or your kids or your little nieces and nephews. Well, check this out. Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project. Their goal is to transform vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help create healthy, livable communities for generations to come. I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting small changes to make a huge difference. Donate online or in store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose.
This is Heather Dubrow's World.
Okay, we're back. Please welcome back the fabulous Taylor Dane.
Thank you, Heather.
And please welcome Dr. Dan Potter.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Nice to see you.
It's so good to see you. Dan is an incredible fertility specialist down in Orange County. I'm very happy to have you here. We've been talking about our experiences with infertility. I have a ton of questions for you. But first, Taylor, I just want to ask you before we delve in with the doctor here.
Sure.
What did you tell your kids? Is this something that they always have grown up knowing, or did you have to tell them how they were conceived?
No, I had to tell them. I mean, I had to tell them, listen, kids now, I mean, they Google all the time. They're on computers. They're, you know, there's nothing that they really don't know except the truth. Okay? Yeah. The truth is what comes out of my mouth. And that's how I am. I'm very direct with my kids. And it was important for me. Probably when they were 6, 7, it started. They were like, who's this? What's – like, mm-hmm. It was like you could see in 6, 7. By 8, I was like, you see my body. You see this. There's reasons. And – I had to carry, and eventually their mind just, they start understanding concept. They just get the concept of this is their dad. They get to talk to him. They understand they were made inside me. And I mean, now they're 14, how it started and that they are my children and that we did it outside and I hired somebody. And they really just don't, they're just moving on.
It's funny. Yeah. Kids are so good about that. They're very
adaptable.
My kids have always grown up knowing, like it's funny because before we got to the birds and bees talk with our two oldest ones, they, you know, because I had C-sections, I didn't have vaginal birth, so I could always explain it. It wasn't really big. They make an incision in your tummy. They take you out. There was like nothing gross to talk
about.
That's
why you look good.
That's why your head has a beautiful shape. Yeah. So they've always known about it. The only thing that I had to change is I used to make a joke about my son because he's got red hair and freckles like no one else.
Oh, wow.
So we'd call him Mistake at the Lab. And then because I think I'm being funny. But like, see, it's funny. But he doesn't think that's funny anymore.
I'm sure he does.
So I had to lose that from the routine.
Yeah, he's like, doesn't want to be the redheaded stepchild.
No, he doesn't. But he's so cute. He's just so fabulous. So, all right, Dr. Potter. I feel weird not calling you Dan, but I'm going to call you Dr. Potter anyway.
Okay.
So it always appears to me, recently that fertility is on the rise. And I'm just curious, is that true or are we just talking about it more?
Well, I think that it's a combination of both things. I think that the demographic that needs fertility care is starting to, you know, reach a higher point. And I think the awareness of what's possible is much higher than it's ever been. So I think those things combine to increase the number of procedures that are done, the number of people that are seeking, say, in vitro fertilization for, you know, other indications other than infertility, such as gender selection or to prevent genetic disease, for example. I mean, you know, so there's a lot of utilization for the procedure. And then you also have same-sex parenting, the incidence of in vitro fertilization in gay couples, gay men, is 100%.
Right, of course.
And the incidence of surrogacy is 100%. And I think that through, you know, a lot of the mainstream media depiction of, you know, these families, I think that has actually helped get awareness of things like surrogacy out there so that it's not weird to talk about. It's not taboo.
Which is a great thing. What's the age that people start having problems? Because we always heard it was 35. Like that's like the advanced maternal age, isn't that when you flip into the AMA written on your chart?
Yeah. That's what the medical term they use. It's really horrible, but it's elderly gravida.
Oh, oh, oh. I swear I just got 4 gray hairs just from hearing it.
Yeah, but, you know, it can happen at any age. I mean, I would say that when, you know, when women are 30 or so, it would be a good idea, whether they're married or not, to have some basic blood work and just make sure that their ovaries are functioning properly and that they're not prematurely losing their fertility so that they have the ability to make informed decisions about their reproductive future. If for example, they're having – so I had – I'll give you a story, and I won't use any names, but one of one of the girls that works for me wanted to be an egg donor, and so we did some blood tests on her. She was 23, and her ovarian function was terrible.
Oh, and she was young.
And she was single, and so – we froze eggs on her. We basically, you know, froze eggs to sort of lock in her fertility potential.
You know, I've always been curious about this. What is the rate of successful unfreezing of an egg versus a fertilized embryo?
Well, the embryos freeze and thaw much better than eggs, and it has to do with the size of the cell. So the egg is the largest cell in the human body, mm-hmm. and so the surface-to-volume ratio is not that great, so it's hard to get the cryoprotectants into the cell, whereas an embryo, the cells are very, very small, and so you have a much higher surface to volume.
How long can you freeze in it? I have these 2 frozen embryos that I'm always talking about. I even had a window in my house etched.
Uh-huh. Oh, you do?
I have this etched thing. It's a tree, and there's like a bird, one for each of the kids. There's a lot of symbolic stuff, uh-huh. and I put a nest. This is how insane I am. I put a nest in the tree that's got 2 eggs that represent the 2 frozen embryos.
I know.
It's sweet.
What do you mean?
That's nice.
But how long can you freeze them for?
I mean, they can stay frozen for, I mean, hypothetically, I mean, several decades.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, when I did it, which was, I guess, 15 years ago, I mean, they couldn't even freeze eggs. Wasn't even, you know, brought up. It wasn't even, I don't think, I mean, it advances so quickly, this, you know, technology. And then also embryos. I did freeze my first. I had at 37, the retrieval was maybe 7 eggs. And so what ended up being fertilized was probably 3.
Right.
And or 4. And then I told you the first surrogate had an issue. And so we couldn't do the fresh transfer. And they froze them. And none of them lived. So it is.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what
day. I think fertility has become also a real big business, to be honest.
Yeah, of course.
The good and the bad.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing about, you know, fertility, I mean, the technology has advanced so rapidly. So at, you know, HRC Fertility, where I am in Newport Beach, we use a technique called vitrification, which isn't actually freezing at all. What we do is we super cool the liquid, and it just becomes so viscous, it becomes a solid.
Wow.
You know, rather than freezing, which involves crystal formation. And
does that protect it better?
Yeah, and the recovery rates are much higher. And so, you know, when Taylor went through her procedure, we were using what we call slow freezing, which is, you know, it's a different process, and there's crystal formation. It was automated. There was a machine, and, you know, those machines, I mean, machines aren't perfect either, you know. And so there are parts of that process that, you know, could put you at risk to have something like no survival or something of that nature.
Yeah.
But
well, they told me then it was a 50-50 chance anyway that, you know, all would survive, or maybe half of them would. But out of 4, I mean, yeah, so.
I remember our eggs, we had really good sperm, and my eggs were good.
0 for 4?
Did I over 4?
No.
I had 4 embryos at that. On the thaw, I had 0. None of them survived. So they froze 4.
How many cycles did you end up having to do?
I did 2.
You did 2.
Well, the second one was fresh, and then they ended up – we did the retrieval. Now the sperm was frozen then.
Right.
Because Mark wasn't coming back from UK anymore. He was like, that's that.
Sorry.
So you see the champions here are the men, always the men. They get it easy. Yeah.
But apparently sperm unfreezes much better than an egg unfreezes.
Yeah, it does. And again, it's –
why do they have it so much easier?
Because they got tons of them. Because they're supposed to spread it like mayo, I think.
They can have kids till they're like 80.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the sperm are the smallest cell in the human body, and so it's very easy to get them to freeze and survive. And that's been being done for more than 50 years, whereas, you know, embryos, it's kind of a new thing.
But
so would you say that this viscous thing that's keeping everything alive better is maybe one of the best developments in fertility in the last 10 years?
It's up there. I mean, I would say the biggest change is our ability to genetically screen the embryos and determine whether or not the embryos have the correct number of chromosomes mm-hmm. in them.
So PGD.
PGD or PGS, however you want to call it. But we're basically able to take the embryos, screen them, and determine whether they have the correct number of chromosomes in them. And we can take all the ones that don't have the correct number of chromosomes and set them aside and not use them. And in the past, we didn't know this, so we'd just transfer, you know, say two, sometimes even three embryos to get one to stick, because depending on your age, let's say at 35, maybe one in three are normal. You know, as it goes, you know, when you get to 40, it's about one in eight. So we would just be putting embryos back, and we wouldn't know. And our response to that was, you know, you put more and more in to try to get something to stick, and then every now and then they all stick, and it was just, you know, you'd have these disastrous results. Mm-hmm. Now with PGS, we can put back a single embryo and achieve pregnancy rates of 80%. So, I mean, it's
That's a whole
different ballgame.
Taylor, did you have genetic testing done on your embryos? Do you remember?
I want to say 15 years ago, probably not.
Yeah. We were just
Absolutely not, actually. And I'll tell you why, because what he's saying is interesting, because the second time they transferred four embryos into
right.
her. And they did that because they said they're not going to risk freezing one or two. It made no sense, because at my age, I was 37, I think. I think I was 30. Those were 38-year-old eggs.
Okay.
And that's why I'm such a champion for my girlfriends. I'm like, you need to do this, like, now. And my girlfriends are in their 40s doing it, and it's a real tough ride for them, most
right.
of them.
So,
yeah.
so
having
so,
a real tough ride.
So at 38, I mean, it's about, let's say, one in four or one in five embryos are going to be normal.
Yeah.
And so,
well, they shoved them all
I
in.
I think
then.
When I did my first cycle of IVF, they didn't do the genetic testing. We had to have genetic counseling, because we're both Jewish, and there's some diseases mm-hmm. if you're both like Ashkenazi Jews.
Yep.
But we didn't do genetic testing on the embryos, but we did the second time we went in.
That's interesting.
Well, we did the second time. I don't remember if it was even offered to us the first time, because I don't think that was a huge concern. But when we went in the second time, exactly what you're talking about, Dan, is that we only wanted one. So because we had twins mm-hmm. and I wanted to have one and I wanted them to just be tested to see if they were healthy. But it lends me to this question about gender selection, and because we had to choose. I told the story earlier before you guys got here, but I said, put in whatever, because I wanted one. I already had a boy and a girl, and I didn't care.
Right.
So I said, put in the strongest. But basically, because they had been tested, they knew, the lab knew what we had.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two neck and neck. So clearly it was a boy and a girl. And I had to say to Terry, well, are we going to let, if this isn't playing God, either the lab guy decides mm-hmm. or we decide.
Wow.
And that was a really heavy conversation. I know some people, you know, and I know people that have done gender selection because they have, you know, a bunch of one, you know, boys, and they always wanted a girl or whatever it is. But, you know, what does that lead us to in the future? You know, are we going to get to a place where people can choose their kids' eye color and hair color, and where does that end?
No. So gender selection is pretty unusual in that it's, you know, you either have an X and a Y or you have an X and an X, and we can see that. And so as it is, when we do in vitro fertilization, let's say on a 38-year-old, and we can use one out of five embryos because the four out of five are abnormal, and now we're going to throw away half of them because of the wrong gender, it's a very inefficient process. If you take something like eye color that has multiple alleles, like maybe five or six, and you got to get them all to line up, all these little toggle switches have to be lined up. I mean, you might need 80 or 100 embryos to find one that's the way you want it.
And by the way, I'm just so happy to hear that.
And it's
right.
just
yeah.
not.
I mean,
but
it's just not as easy as.
Well, it's not practical. It's not feasible. I mean, people say, "Is it possible?" I mean, a lot of things are possible hypothetically, but practically, it's not. You know, it's not something. So you're not going to be choosing the eye color of your child as we're doing next generation sequencing. So the 24 chromosome testing, you know, we helped develop that at Newport Beach. And, you know, I spent 10 years as the laboratory director for Natera, which is a big you know, publicly traded genetics company. And, you know, the technology we were using at that time, there's a certain amount of detail that you get, but the new technology, I mean, effectively, we're pretty soon going to have the ability to completely sequence an embryo, and there may be parts of the genome that predispose people to cancer or something else that we might be able to detect. Now, these
that's fabulous.
Now, these are all hypotheticals.
Right.
We don't know. And, you know, for example, there are certain traits like there are people who are just, you know, when HIV was in its heyday, I mean, there are people that were literally born with, you know, certain receptors that made them immune to that disease, for example. And so, I mean, as we get to know more and more, I mean, we're going to have more and more information about ourselves. We're going to have more and more information about the potential offspring that we can have. And so what you're going to see is you would come in as a potential mother, the potential father would come in, you're going to get sequenced, the information is going to be put into a computer, and the computer is going to generate all the possible offspring that you can have and see if there's any potential problems.
Wow. And see, then, that's worth it. I was just really worried that we're creating some Aryan race.
And then we might be able to, you know, then specifically look like, okay, there's like 300 possible whatever, you know, offspring, and there are two of them that are going to be problems. We could like make sure that we didn't have those two, for example, that are going to have whatever, some, you know, spinal muscular atrophy or who knows.
Amazing. I'd go for height.
Tell me about
it. I would be like, give me some height.
Give me some long legs.
Give me some legs. Oh, yeah.
You look pretty fabulous. All right. And then my final question is, because I just must know this. I, you know, had two rounds. I did in vitro. I have twins and then went back, had another one. And then I got pregnant naturally. Uh-huh. And who knew that when you have sex, you get pregnant? Because that was not my experience. No one told me that.
Yeah. Wow. I understand people are still getting pregnant that way.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. I always say, you know, it was such a romantic evening. I was in a gown of cotton, laying on a beautiful metal bed.
One of the things that I contemplate with the technology and the advancement of the technology is just that, you know how as a pregnant woman, there's a choice at some point, this is before we could screen the embryos ahead of time, where you had to decide whether you were going to do an amniocentesis or not, mm-hmm. whether you were going to act on that. And when that technology was first introduced, I mean, people said, oh my God, you're interfering with nature. This is, you know, God's work. They said the same thing about just regular in vitro fertilization also. And, you know, as we have the ability to screen and prevent these diseases, if you have artificial, you know, conception, I mean, are people going to look at it the same way? Because if someone's child has something that's preventable and they had the ability to do it, I mean, as a parent, it's sort of our job to make sure nothing bad happens to our kids, you know?
Absolutely. So, all right, I have to go back to this question because I really want to know, why is it that people who try to get pregnant for a million years and they do everything and nothing works, and then they adopt a child and they get pregnant 5 minutes later? Or like me, who couldn't get pregnant for years and years and years, did all this in vitro, and then one day, pregnant.
Well, I mean, it's the difference between possible and impossible, and then improbable and improbable. And so if you have infertility, you aren't necessarily sterile. I mean, there's some non-zero chance that you're going to get pregnant every month. And for most couples, like people that have been trying for more than 2 years and nothing's wrong, probably about a 1 in 50 chance of them getting pregnant every month. Now, 1 in 50 to 1 shot, those are long odds, but it's not like lottery odds. It's not impossible. And every month that you take that chance and have unprotected intercourse, you're basically spinning that wheel, and it's sort of like spinning a roulette wheel and getting the zero, basically.
Right. Do you think that actually being pregnant and having a child like cleans out the pipes and makes it gives you a better chance?
I think it can if you have, especially if endometriosis is part of what's causing the inefficiency for somebody. I think that can help because the endometriosis goes into, you know, it goes kind of dormant during pregnancy and breastfeeding, and so during that period of dormancy, your immune system can sometimes overwhelm and just eliminate it.
Very interesting. Well, thank you so much for being here, Dr. Potter. He's down in Orange County in Newport Beach. He's an amazing doctor if you're looking for a fertility doctor. Taylor, I adore you.
Likewise.
I am so glad I got to meet you. Thank you for being on my show.
I'm gonna
come see you when you're performing next.
I'd love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Finding clarity on car pricing can be difficult. You could be paying thousands more than your neighbor for the same car. So how do you really know what's fair? It's good to do your research when buying a car, but there's really one place to get the most comprehensive car pricing information available. And the truth is, car prices can vary even within your area. So when you know the car you want and you're ready to buy, there's only one place to go: TrueCar and the TrueCar app. No headaches, no hassles, just the car you want at a price you can feel good about. You can now go online to find the fair price on a new car via TrueCar. Now, with TrueCar, you can see what others in your area have paid for the same car you're looking for, which helps you determine a fair price. Then, you can get a guaranteed savings certificate from a TrueCar certified dealer. Your savings will be honored by a TrueCar certified dealer without the need to negotiate. TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. No hassles or headaches. It's really how car buying was always meant to be. Over 2 million cars have been sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and there are over 10,000 dealers in the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. You work directly with a TrueCar Certified Dealer contact. Visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app and start saving. TrueCar, never overpay. I just wanted to take a minute to thank all of my great sponsors and all of you great listeners for supporting this podcast. We certainly could not do this show without either of you. And I want to remind you that you can shop with Amazon and support my podcast at the same time. Go to Podcast One and click on Killer Deals in the menu bar. Then select my show and you'll be directed to my Amazon banners that include my unique URL as well as the sponsors who bring you my podcast every week. Click and shop. And for all my listeners in Canada and the UK, I've got links for you too. So check it out and buy the products you already planned on purchasing. Just use my Amazon page first. So thank you for downloading, subscribing, and of course, supporting. And now back to the show.
Now back to Heather Dubrow's world.
Okay, let's see what we have in the mail.
Okay, dear.
Do people still send letters?
I don't think so.
Do you ever send a letter?
No.
Do you want to know what I miss?
What?
I miss invitations.
Like hard invitations versus...
It took me a long, long time to stop sending invitations for my kids' birthday parties and get on the whole Evite thing.
I know. There's something... But then the problem is you just end up throwing them away anyway, so...
I used to like looking at them, put them on the bulletin board. The kids could look at them. They like getting mail. It was really sweet, but yeah, no longer. Okay, so we email.
Yeah, exactly.
Email. Okay, what do we have for Dear Heather?
Okay, Dear Heather, I know you cut your bangs for the reunion on RHOC a while back, so I wanted to ask you, I'm dying to cut my hair short and my husband is begging that I don't do it. Should I not?
Listen, men like long hair. I talk about this all the time. I don't know what it is. Men like long, straight hair. Women like style, changes. As far as I'm concerned, it's just hair. But you really have to weigh how much he really doesn't want you to cut your hair. Because let's face it, you want him to be attracted to you also.
Right.
I think that it might be fun just to go get a wig.
And try it out
and see if you actually like it and see how he reacts to it.
That's smart.
Maybe don't tell him. Maybe just get the wig.
That's smart.
See how it goes. Maybe he'll get used to it and then you can cut your hair, or then you'll surprise him and you could do both looks.
Ooh, I like it.
I like the whole idea of having fun with hair pieces and wigs and stuff like that. I think it's such an easy, fun, cool way to change your look up.
Yeah. Well, everything fits you, so you're good with that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But not everything. Blonde, not good on me.
Oh, no. Okay, here's another question. Dear Heather, how do you feel about a full face of makeup on at a pool party?
Okay, makeup at the beach, makeup at the pool. I have very, very mixed feelings about this because the truth is, it depends on the pool. It depends on the party. This is very situational.
Right.
I always wear something on my skin when I'm outside in the sun because for sun protection. So I like to wear like a tinted moisturizer or like a CC cream that's got a high SPF in it. Mm-hmm. Kate Somerville has a great one called Illumicate. I love wearing that because you get the sun protection and you get a little, evening out of the skin tone and all that. But then the question is, what other makeup is on? I mean, do I put on a full face of makeup with eyeshadow and eyeliner to go to the pool? No. If I was in Las Vegas going to a party at one of those pools with heels on, like I did for Tamara's bachelorette party, yes, I had a full face of makeup on. If I were going to my sister's house and her son was having a birthday party at their pool and I was going in the water, no.
Right.
But if the kids were just swimming, my kids are older, they're all pool safe. And if I was just like hanging out, I would have makeup on. A full face? I mean,
this sounds like it's a pool party. So I'm assuming it's probably like a Vegas type of pool.
I think if your head is going to be submerged in water, it's not a great idea to have a ton
eyelashes on.
Of makeup on because it's not going to go well. I remember when we were filming Real Housewives and we were in Hawaii, and so we were going to go surfing, and I'm terrified of water. They've made me go white water rafting. Then they took me surfing. But if you saw the show, I ended up absolutely loving it.
Yes.
Of course, it was in Waikiki where the wave was 2 inches
big.
And there's pictures of me. I'm like stuck on the board like I'm riding a 12-foot wave. It's hilarious. When I saw the pictures, because I thought I was such a stud. And I saw the pictures and I went, huh, interesting. Not so big. Can we Photoshop that?
Yeah, right.
Anyway, when we went to the beach to go do that surfing thing, there was no way I was surfing. So because we were filming, I had eyelashes on,
oh,
I had makeup on. Oh, yeah. Oh, halfway through the surfing expedition, one eyelash went that way, one eyelash went to the other side. I had nothing.
Oh, so
the only thing I will say is please make sure that whatever you're going to wear is waterproof, your eyeliner and your mascara, or else that is not going to look good coming out of the water with that black dripping down your face.
So funny, especially after like a couple cocktails, you don't even know what you look like anymore. So.
And then there's also the ridiculousness of the girls who have like the full on extensions and the beauty shop hair and all the makeup, and they just pin the back up and don't submerge beneath like the shoulders. And you're going, what's the what is going on?
I remember I went to a pool party once and it was raining. It was in Vegas, and everyone was under. I mean, you're going to get wet. You're at a pool party, and everyone's covering their makeup and their hair. It's like, what? That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. Except Vegas is the one place where you're going to the pool. People don't go in the pool.
Right.
They go to those clubs that are at the pool. So it's really like going to a club outside, and there happens to be a large body of water there,
filled with God knows what.
Oh, please, you cannot go. Listen, another tip: don't ever sit by the swim up bar. Have you ever noticed people don't move from the swim-up bar?
Oh, I know.
It's disgusting.
So bad. Okay. Last question is, dear Heather, I recently went on a blind date. It was going pretty great until the check came. I offered to pay, assuming he would say no, but he had no problem passing me the bill and letting me pay. I was a little taken back. Is chivalry dead?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think it was very appropriate of you to ask because I don't think it should be assumed that a man has to pay. I would have hoped that he would have said, if money were an issue, or, you know, maybe like it wasn't a great date and he knew there was going to be a second date, you split the bill.
At least.
At the very, very least. I mean, I would have hoped that he would have picked up the bill. I would hope if it was my son sitting there, he would pick up the bill. But again, I don't know all of the circumstances. So unless you were like a horrible, rude, terrible date, I see no reason for him to not at least split it.
I agree.
Chivalry is not dead, but I would say your future with that man is.
That's a good way to end that.
Thank you so much for listening to my show. Please go to podcastone.com and click on Killer Deals, and you'll find my Amazon banner, my unique URL, and you can buy everything you normally buy on Amazon, which for me is almost everything. I love Amazon. And you get to support our show and keep podcasting for free. Also, please, if you have an extra 10 seconds, go to iTunes, search Heather Dubrow's World, and click on the review button and leave us a 5-star review. Tell me what you love about the show. What do you want to hear more of? What kind of guests do you want to have on the show? We love hearing from you. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Heather Dubrow. Oh, and Terry and I are going to be on Hollywood Psychic Medium with Tyler Henry, and that is coming up on February 21st on E! Right after an all-new Kardashians. Tyler's going to be on the show in a few weeks. He's incredible. If you haven't caught his show, catch it, and he'll be on here in a few weeks. Thank you again, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heather Dubrow's World. Download new episodes every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.